on the upside, Real Madrid fans, he's still going to win the league. As long as they build Karim Benzema a bionic leg as quickly as possible, and we never, ever talk about Casemiro playing centre-back again. When Zinedine Zidane looked at his phone this morning, there were 5 missed calls from Florentino Perez. Yes, Barcelona won the Clásico just a bit. The centre-forward from Arsenal, who they didn't need, no, not Eddie Nketiah, the other one, Aubameyang, he scored 2, Ferran Torres got 1, and that was despite their personal chance-missing duel. Araujo scored as well, 4-0, and that was kind on Real Madrid, as evidenced by Carlo Ancelotti's haunted expression and Thibaut Courtois' backache. Watching the rest of the action on Sunday was as painful as Luis Suarez's hamstrings the day after he's played a football match or indeed just walked to the shops. The bad news for Terry Gibson is that La Liga TV are now paying their commentators by the goal. There were 4 1-0s, 2 0-0s, and one of the 1-0s was the first goal of the season, scored by a player who, to be fair, has supplied us with a few spectacular strikes over the years. The world's worst unbeaten run continues severe. Haven't lost a league game since November. So everything's fine, yeah? Well, they won 2 from 9 in La Liga. They've been knocked out of the Champions League, the Copa del Rey by Betis, and the Europa League by West Ham. However, the relegation battle is interesting. Granada, Cadiz were winners. Mallorca now lost 6 in a row. Thank you to our patrons. Thank you to everybody for listening. The Patreons all went to patreon.com/LTEL. And they joined in the party. Eduardo is the latest. Welcome along, Eduardo. Enjoy your time with us. We're around in midweek discussing stuff, the European campaigns and all of that. But right now, Terry, we're down to business. Well, I've got some questions from the patrons ready to go. Thankfully, the rest of La Liga cleared out the day on Sunday with nothing happening. So we can focus purely on the Clásico. Oh, well, not entirely, but we'll get to the rest in a bit. But it gives us a bit of time for the Clásico, which Barcelona fans, of course, will be looking forward to. Real Madrid fans will be hoping we all forget ever happened. And Carlo Ancelotti, where do we start? Do you want to start with good Xavi or... No, let's start with bad Carlo, shall we?
I think it's the biggest reason for the outcome of this match was the... I tried to explain it on La Liga TV about the definition of a manager having a bad game. Because it's sometimes we all moan at managers sometimes, and the teams you support, it can often be, oh, is he playing right back? Or when a substitution's made, we have a little moan and go, oh, why has he brought him off? Yeah. Those sort of things. And we think that's how much a manager can influence a game with the team selection, the substitutions. But in Ancelotti's case, he ripped up everything good about Real Madrid this season, purely because of one player missing. And I must be honest that I have so much respect, all the respect in the world for Ancelotti. I think he's an elite coach. He seems to be a really good guy as well. He knows how to manage superstars, and I think he's a fabulous manager. So it's just one of those days for him. But I'm really surprised. It was out of character for him to be trying to be as modern and sophisticated as he tried to be by playing, not doing the obvious, and playing someone that, you're not going to replace Benzema. The form that he's in is irreplaceable. And there's nobody in Real Madrid's team that can directly replace him. But there are replacements. Mariano Diaz came on. Personally, I would have gone with Luka Jovic. Gareth Bale was injured. That's another scenario I've got to come back to in a minute. I'll touch upon that later on. But there are players that could have done it. Now, we were looking at the possibilities, and there's a possibility of Isco playing in that role, Asensio playing in that role, one or two others, and the obvious one to me was Luka Jovic, who I think has been showed signs this season when he's been given opportunities of being a more than decent striker. But he's been written off. Mariano Diaz, I have no time whatsoever for him because I think he's wasted his career at Real Madrid, 28 years old. He barely ever plays a game. Every now and then he gets a little sniff and he thinks that's enough to hang around the club a bit longer. There's been ample opportunities for him to leave. I know of that personally. I know of clubs in England that are interested. And he has this opinion of himself that he thinks he's a Real Madrid player and he'll only go to a regular Champions League club in another country. And he's more than happy just to sit there and be associated with Real Madrid. So for that instance, the club have tried to move him on. I won't play him either. So either to go with Luka Jovic, who's going to leave at the end of the season. He has to, for his own self-respect. And if Benzema's fit, injured, then he should be the next player in line. So to rip up everything that Real Madrid have been good at this year, so the basic back four, I mean, Fernand Mondi was missing, so Nacho has to come in. That's a straightforward replacement. It could have been Marcelo. And then you've got the midfield three, and then you've got the left winger Vinicius. You're missing Benzema, and you need to pick a right winger. And I'll come to that later as well. So I'm being quite harsh on Ancelotti here, but I've qualified that by saying that I have all respect to the world for him. I think he's a brilliant manager, but he just got it horribly wrong. And this is the definition of a manager having a bad night, a bad game. And to rip it all up and go with this, I presume it was a full centre forward role where I believe Vinicius and Rodrigo were asked to play as the two strikers. So it's kind of a 4-4-2. And it's with a diamond in midfield. And it appeared that Modric was at the top of the diamond and was going to break through from midfield. But Vinicius and Rodrigo, in my opinion, were asked to play slightly narrower than they normally would in a 4-3-3 with Benzema in between them. So when they play that role, they're both wingers. Benzema's up the middle. Last night, I think he tried to get them to play infield as inside forwards. And therefore, what he was hoping was that, yes, Real Madrid would concede a bit of possession to Barcelona, but still leave two players up, two really good, quick players, so that when Barcelona lose possession, Real Madrid could strike quickly. And instead of having, you know, Vinicius and Rodrigo dropping in deep and leaving Benzema up front on his own, the idea was to have the two youngsters with their pace, probably up against Eric Garcia and Piqué and spinning down the channels, and with their pace, they would have been hard to deal with. Now, that didn't work. That was clearly, but it was a change in system. So therefore, he broke up the midfield three, because now Fede Valverde was playing. We had Casemiro with Kroos and Valverde. You have Modric playing slightly higher. So therefore, it breaks up the midfield partnership trio. So you lose that basic element of your team, which has been successful. Mm. Casemiro, Modric, Kroos, they know what they're doing. They give you a platform to go and build on. They give you a platform to defend. So that broke up. He then changed the shape of the front players. So that was totally different to anything we've seen from Real Madrid this season in a competitive game. And it just left them all over the place. And for the first 10 minutes, I thought Valverde looked like he should have been the player at the tip of the diamond. He should have been the one that was racing through, because he was performing that duty from a deeper midfield position. They didn't know how to go and close down as a three with Modric in between Vinicius and Rodrigo. And then it just went horribly wrong once Barcelona realised that they could get out the back quite easy into midfield. And then the defenders individually weren't having the best of games for Real Madrid. I think Militao has been excellent this season, but it was a kind of an ill-disciplined, wild performance from him. Crashing into tackles, the emotion of the game got the better of him. And Ancelotti compounded his initial mistake. He did tinker with it in the first half. I was looking at it thinking at 1-0, he needs to change this now, because at that stage, about 30 minutes gone, I'm thinking they're not going to get to half time just the one goal behind. It needed a change in the first half to admit I've made a mistake here. I need to get back to something that resembles what we're good at. And he should have done that change. It might have meant taking a player off and putting another centre forward on who could play up there, because there were times when Modric was looking to play the ball forward and there was nobody there. And they were 1-0 down, and yeah, they were having to go square and backwards. And it was, you need an outlet. You need a focal point in the attack. You haven't got one.
If you look at the whole Real Madrid, I've just, for the patrons, I've hopefully, as Terry was talking, flagged up a few of the touch maps. It's mass.com, this, if you want to have a look. In total touches there from Real Madrid, it's a huge gap there, centre forward position, isn't it? No, you know, so they get some of the ball, it's normal spread, no one touching the ball in the centre forward position at all throughout the, you know, the whole course of the game. Just never got into that space.
No, and it was a problem. And a couple of times you heard the crowd show their frustration, because they wanted Real Madrid to go forward and they couldn't. There was no one there to go to. So it played into the hands. And I thought he should have made a change after 30 minutes. He didn't. They didn't get to half-time with just the one goal deficit. It went to two. And then inexplicably, in trying to, a degree of panic, I guess, which is unlike him. That's what I mean. It's out of character. They're two goals behind. I mean, they showed recently they're capable of a comeback. We know Real Madrid are capable of a comeback. But to go to 3-3 at the back against that three, Barcelona. So you're asking them to play 1v1. We saw in the opening 2 minutes of the second half how horribly that went for Real Madrid. Ferran Torres should have scored, and then he does score. It was 2 minutes into the second half. There could have been two goals. And then after that, I would find it difficult to pin down exactly what he tried to do after that. So this was the definition of a manager, you know, having a bad game. And it's not easy to always identify that. We can complain about, oh, his tactics are cautious, he's negative, didn't like his team selection, didn't like the, you know, substitutions he made. But this was an example of a manager, and he admitted it after the game. And I say it's out of character. And this, I have a feeling this could, Real Madrid could use this as like a join a line under this performance, like Atletico did against Levante, where things got awfully bad as they could get for Atletico, and they've started again. And I'd like to think Ancelotti would look at that last night and think, no, what makes us good is this. This is our, these are our basic fundamentals. I'm not going to change now for the rest of the season. Whatever happens, whoever's fit, whoever's injured, we're going to stick to a system of play that we all understand. Because added on top of this is they were hoping Benzema was going to be fit. It was a long shot, but they're hoping he was going to be fit. So I presume they hadn't worked on this too long in training because they were hoping that he was going to be fit to play. Mm. It was only probably on late Friday, Saturday morning, we learned that Benzema wasn't going to be fit. Up until that point, they were still hoping he was going to be. So they hadn't. It's not something they've practiced all week.
So therefore, so, just keep it the same and stick someone in his place to do the best.
Yeah,
and if Benzema Jovic, impression. Yeah.
If Jovic isn't as good as Benzema, and I'm not saying he is, but the rest of the team will be the same.
Yeah.
Whereas last night, the whole team was, it was a shambles, to be honest. I mean, seeing Real Madrid suffer when they're playing 3-3, those, the Aubameyang goal, the way the defence is stretched out, the way that Barcelona attack is stretched out, and you're leaving one against one.
Yeah.
I mean, Nacho was finding it hard in the left-back spot against Dembele on his own. Yeah. And that was with a back four. Then suddenly you're asking your three defenders to play one against one. No pressure on the ball in midfield. There was only one outcome, and that was it. So a bad night for Ancelotti, dreadful night for Real Madrid. And then, you know, what I'm saying is I think they'll focus their attention there on, no, this is what makes us good. We're a 4-3-3 team this season, and this is what makes us good. If Benzema's injured, we'll replace him with... Don't try to be too complicated. I feel for Jovic, I really do. Actually, when I say I feel for him, I'm annoyed on his behalf that he wasn't given an opportunity in that game last night.
Let me throw some questions at you, Terry. So I'll do some Real Madrid questions. We will get to Barca, everybody, in a bit, and how well they played, of course. Stu, I'll ask to be going on with. So, Stu, do you think Madrid would have set up that way, decided to press as they did, with the gap, if the gap in the league was much closer? It felt, says Stu, like an experiment from Ancelotti, given the huge lead they have. It backfired, but at least he knows not to try again. And Tapiwa says, do Madrid need to read more into that Clásico result, or is it just a case of reinforcing the importance of trusting your squad a little bit more as a coach in the absence of starters rather than completely changing the system? So in a sense, two guys there just saying, listen, move on, do more obvious things. And because, as I said at the very beginning, they're going to win the league unless something dramatic happens, aren't they now?
Yeah, I mean, it's theirs to lose. I mean, we're talking about a possible 9 gap between them and Barca, and 9 gap now between them and Sevilla. It don't look like changing their form and closing the gap on Real Madrid. So I think they were two really, really good points. An experiment, yes, possibly. And because of the lead they have in the league, perhaps it lent towards that way. I agree with both those points. I think they're excellent. It's and do they need to reinforce? Yeah, they're going to anyway. I'm sure Mbappe will be there next season. But I think by and large, I don't want to be critical of Real Madrid this season because they've been really good, been consistent as well throughout. It's only their third defeat of the season, but it does mean, in my opinion, and I'm sure most people agree, and seeing what we saw last night, that there is one way for them to play this season and just stick with that.
Yes. Right. I'm going to ask you half of Darren's question because I think we'll move on to Barcelona. Yeah, well, so Darren says, great having Terry's insight and analysis around the game coverage last night. I agree with that.
Thanks, Darren. Thank you.
To start with the positives, big step in the early stages of Xavi's rebuilding process. Tactically outworked Ancelotti in every department, tormented Nacho and Carvajal in the first half. His relentlessness on the bench shows there is a massive burning desire to succeed, and the attitude is rubbing off on the players. Made a brave call in starting Eric Garcia and moving Araujo to right back, but largely negated the threat of Vinicius. They still have a massive summer of very hard work ahead, but there's a spark and excitement about Xavi that is hard to deny. So, yeah, let's talk about how Barcelona played last night then, Terry.
Yeah, and you talk about the bench, how good the bench is. Just one last point around Madrid. Yeah. It must, Ancelotti has got to trust the players that he doesn't play on a regular basis. Because just my last thing on Real Madrid, because none of those players that could have played last night are in any shape to play a game.
So is it too late, though?
Sharp for a Clásico.
Yeah.
I mean, you're looking at the possibilities. None of them have played lately. Gareth Bale hasn't played.
Yeah.
Jovic hasn't played. Isco hasn't played. Mariano Diaz hasn't played. Hazard. So he's a victim of his own choice. Hazard. I forgot about Hazard.
Yeah.
It was my other last point.
Go on.
Rodrigo will never, ever be as good as Eden Hazard. That's my opinion.
Mm.
He's not as good as him now. He'll never be as good as Eden Hazard was at his best. Why isn't Ancelotti trying to recover Hazard? He's not playing at all now, ever. He doesn't play. He doesn't even come on. So I just don't get that reluctance to not. I think he would have played Gareth Bale if Gareth Bale being fit. My last rant about Real Madrid, well, maybe not. I'm going on. Gareth Bale, Real Madrid are paying Gareth Bale 600 grand a week to be fit for Wales. Basically.
Yeah.
He didn't train this week because of the international break.
Yeah.
Because he wants to be fit to play for Wales. So he wasn't in the squad yesterday because it was a risk that he might have got injured and not be fit for the Wales games. What the hell is that about? So, and Hazard's doing nothing of the sort. He's training. I saw signs like Jovic of him approaching his best form. The fact he's not allowed to play at all, doesn't come off the bench, is an absolute, it's a crime, I think, against football, that he's not being trusted to play in any game, let alone a big game like the Clásico, to come off the bench at the very least. I know it might have been beyond him last night, but so this is where Ancelotti, the one thing that is slightly annoying me is his reluctance to use some of the players in the squad. And that will come back, it might come back to haunt him during the season. Benzema's second injury in about 2 months now. Both muscle injuries. That's because, you know, Benzema wants to play in every single game, and Ancelotti wants him to play in every single game. And at the age of 34, these things do happen. So his reluctance to use those other players in the squad and to give them a chance to get confident, to be sharp. So when they're called upon, they're at least match fit. None of them were. None of the opportunities, none of the players, the options last night to replace Benzema were anywhere near fit and sharp. Match fit and match sharp to play in that game.
Yeah.
Rant over about Real Madrid. Let's go on to Barcelona.
I'm just going to say something about Hazard as well. Sorry, because it does annoy me. People point out, Real Madrid fans will point out, he wasn't fit when he turned up. He hasn't kept himself fit. Fair enough. So he shares some culpability, Eden Hazard.
Yes.
But he's been one of the great players in football in the last 10 years.
Aiden exactly.
You can't write the guy off, can you? You know, a fully fit Hazard, as I've said before, he should have been, how he could have linked up with Modric in the tail end of Modric's career, the two of them would have worked beautifully together.
And Benzema.
There is an answer, isn't there? You can find an answer. Hazard is a good enough player to find a way of playing with these players. Problems with his fitness, but you can't just write the guy off. I think Arsenal just wrote off Aubameyang. Finish with him. Right, okay. Yeah. Right, so that's what you're just a world class player, and that's it. Get rid. Okay. Yeah. Anyway,
Barcelona.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, Xavi makes some big choices, doesn't he? I probably, my eyebrows were raised when I saw Eric Garcia playing and Dani Alves left out at right back, and Araujo playing at right back to deal with Vinicius. Kind of get that, but I think Dani Alves. I remember this game in the Super Cup. I thought he dealt really well with Vinicius. He got tight. I've mentioned in recent podcasts that there's a slightly different Dani Alves to the one we've always seen. he's a little bit more cynical now, a bit more aggressive. He knows he's not as quick as he was, so he gets tight to wingers. He gets, you know, really up close, and he's prone at the moment to getting too close and giving away too many fouls and picking up bookings and stuff. But that's his, you know, that is quite normal actually for a defender that's not as quick. They decide to be more offensive with their tackling, so they're tighter. They don't drop off. They don't think, I've got the confidence now. If he knocks it past me, I'll still stay with him. So they get tight. They don't allow wingers to turn. So I thought Danny Alves could have done that job. As it turns out, Xavi was right. But Eric Garcia, I'm surprised that he was playing. But in this game, he wasn't tested at all because there was no centre forward. So that kind of fell kindly for Xavi as well, that the fact there was no opposition to play against for Eric Garcia, him and Pico were just bringing the ball out the back. So they were the big calls from him. It's tough on Gavi not to be in the starting 11, but I don't have too many complaints about that when you look at the rest of the players selected. Dembele was awesome again. I really cannot see why he would want to leave. Mm. You know, he's integrated back into that squad, but it looked like it was gone, didn't it? In January, when they were trying to move him on, he didn't leave. They weren't able to sell him. There didn't look any way back for him this season. And Xavi, to his credit, decided no. And I think Laporta would have been quite happy to have done that, to have discarded him.
Yeah,
he wanted to do it.
How well clubs do that, don't they? All the time. Yeah. And it's a weird thing, isn't it? It's like they, it's like your puffed up male pride comes before the practical thought of, yeah, but we've got this guy under contract. We might as well play him and see. And I guess Xavi had a plan. I've got a question on that from AM. Slightly controversial question, but there we go. What was this Dembele's worst second half ever? What can be said or done about a professional player who habitually can't pass a ball 5 yards? Is it interesting? Because his performance did tail off because he was sensational in the first half. It's an interesting spin, you know, given, you might say focusing on the negative aspect of his performance was that it tailed off.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's something we've always whinged about, that the easy things he sometimes takes for granted and then starts giving the ball away cheaply. But I just look at him now when they were celebrating the goals, celebrating the victory. He's fully integrated into that group and the manager and the coaching staff. And as I say, to Xavi's credit, he could have gone along with what Laporta wanted, where discard him, don't play him. That was the threat that was made, wasn't it? If you don't leave now, you're not playing again. And interestingly, you hear sometimes of players who are out of contract in the summer. I heard this weekend, Adnan, I don't know if it's true, I haven't checked it out, Adnan Januzaj is out of contract at Real Sociedad. Yeah. I think he's a really good player. There's been no mention of his future. Real Sociedad are playing him as a grown-up, mature, sensible decision.
Well, to be fair,
he's our player, he's under contract, we're playing.
I think if you look at how many...
in the summer, we'll try and keep him, if not...
This is Barcelona's reality now. We'll get back to the game in a bit, but anyway, Barcelona's reality now, their financial reality, puts them in the position of the bottom third of clubs in La Liga. I think Alaves have got some like 14 out of contract players almost every year the clubs with not a lot of money are looking at the summer thinking, right, okay, you know, let's open the jigsaw box again, isn't it, every summer?
Yeah.
And put it all together again. And Barcelona find themselves in that situation. So those clubs obviously can't be, oh, let's leave someone to rot in the reserves for 6 months.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
That's the reality of their lives, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it is an issue, not just with Barcelona. It happens at a few clubs now where they feel offended if it goes that way. You know, it may well be the player ends up staying. A deal is agreed at some stage, but at this current in time, when players are allowed to sign for other clubs or agree terms with other clubs, particularly in other countries, that it becomes an issue. But, you know, it's something that clubs in general have to deal with now, that, okay, his contract's up. It does look like he's leaving. But, you know, he's our player. We're paying him. We'll play him to the end of the season. The issue becomes then if the player's attitude, whether he wants to play as he has been playing because of injury, that might be an issue for some players. But in general, it isn't. So I think to see Dembele back playing in by and large to his best form, the link up with Aubameyang, and I was talking on La Liga TV about the likes of Aubameyang still want to come to Barcelona. And one of the big reasons is to play in that game last night. You know, to play in a Clásico, it's an incredible game of football. possibly, probably the biggest club game in the world. And if you're an elite footballer who gets the opportunity to do that, one of the reasons you're joining Real Madrid and Barcelona is to play in a Clásico. It's pure and simple. So Aubameyang, it's going to be hard for him to find anywhere better. And I've made the point before that Xavi is a big fan.
Dembele.
Yeah. And that's, you know, as a player, you want the manager to have confidence in you and play you on a regular basis and think you're an important player. Will he get that elsewhere? I don't know. But it'd be interesting to see what the outcome is, because he looks happier than he ever has done at Barcelona. He's fit, he's playing well, and the manager has faith in him. So it'd be interesting to see what he does. But it was a mismatch when he was up against Nacho. And that's not criticism of Nacho. It's a criticism of maybe Militao, who didn't get across and help him. They left him on his own. And when it's a foot race, Dembele against Nacho, and he knocks it out of his feet, there's nothing Nacho can do to stay with him. So that was the incident for the first goal. Great attacking play from Aubameyang to get across the near post and get the header in. That set things rolling. But it was great wing play. We can look at Barcelona, the way that Araujo and Piqué dominated the set piece. They nearly scored before. And they just walked into the penalty area against Real Madrid. No one picked them up. I think Modric was the closest to engaging against Araujo. He tried to bump and knock and block him as Araujo just walked into the box and then picked up his stride for about 3 or 4 yards before Alaba realised there was a problem, but Araujo had a free header and scored from quite close distance. So that was good work from Barcelona in terms of, you know, recognising the fact that maybe Araujo was best to play at some position in the team because of the threat from set pieces. So that was another good decision from Xavi. And Barcelona were terrific. I mean, Pedri was running the show. Busquets was good again. De Jong was good again. Jordi Alba seemed to have got a new lease of life in terms of energy, because I thought that had gone, but it's come back and he's up and down the pitch and a real threat going forward, and he's good at getting back again and making sure he's in his defensive positions. Ter Stegen looks more confident in goal, more solid in goal. I mean, all round, I mean, it was a sensational display by Barcelona. Aubameyang couldn't, I saw the stats at the end of the game for Aubameyang chances, shots on goal and stuff like that. He would not, in his wildest dreams, would have imagined that he was going to get all those opportunities in his first Clásico away from home against a team that were sitting 10 points clear at the top of the league. I mean, as a striker, you go into the game thinking, I hope I get one or two attempts. I hope I get one or two chances. A couple of half chances would be nice if they can fall my way. If he had an abundance of chances, we can give him all the credit in the world for his two goals. But it should have been 4 or 5. He should have scored 4 or 5.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely that Dembele had one.
Yeah.
It kind of looked to me of the Brazil-Germany game in the World Cup, when it was just goal after goal for Germany. And you're thinking, this can't be happening. Yeah. This is in Brazil and they're getting thrashed and it's like an absolute shambles. And that game last night had the look of that, in the fact it was so easy for Barcelona against a Real Madrid team in disarray. And the 4-0, I think, actually...
Yeah, it did them a favour. Just to dampen the mood for Barcelona fans listening, the Bayern Munich game as well, isn't it? That was
where
one team's tactical plan has just shot and gone out of the window and they don't adjust. And the other team just keep on running through. And Bayern were ruthless, and Barca weren't particularly ruthless, were they, last night?
No.
You know, it could have been different, yeah. Question from Daniel. What about Barca's play confounded Madrid? Surely it was more than just Benzema's absence. I know you've already, so you've touched on that to a degree, but to what extent? I mean, we decided to start with Ancelotti's mistakes. Is that the emphasis? Is that your reflected view that it was more?
Yeah,
they basically left the door open and Barcelona came crashing through it.
Yeah, they played into the hands of Barcelona. But Barcelona had been good and they were excellent last night. They did all you could ask of them. They look a really good team. That is going to do their confidence. We're talking over the weekend about teams that played in Europe last week, how tough it's been for them. We kind of forgot that Barcelona had a struggle. A tough game on Thursday against Galatasaray. Mm. Real Madrid had the free week. You know, we excused Villarreal losing to Cadiz. We excused Betis only drawing at Celta. Sevilla drawing at home against Real Sociedad because they played European football this week. And we kind of, it wasn't until after, well after the game last night, I thought, actually, Barcelona played this week and didn't seem to do them any harm. In Galatasaray, in a tough game as well. So they're in great form. I mean, I haven't had a close look at their fixtures, but I wouldn't put it past them with the way that they're playing now. They win every single game. Now, are we talking a league title challenge? If they win their game in hand against Rayo, the gap goes to 9. I think they're going to catch Sevilla, but I predicted that a while ago, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I'm going to stick with that prediction. And I think Atletico Madrid will catch Sevilla. And there is a hint now that Sevilla have suddenly gone from title contenders to top 4. That's their challenge because there are, you know, Betis are not a million miles away. Real Sociedad, Villarreal, it's possible they can close the gap on Sevilla as well. But if you look at Barcelona's fixtures, it's not possible. They can do 9.
So they've got Sevilla, Levante away, who are always generous. Cadiz at home should beat them. Real Sociedad away, tricky one, isn't it? Who knows? Rayo Vallecano at home, Mallorca at home, Betis away, again tricky. Celta Vigo, Getafe away, and finish against Villarreal. Whereas Sevilla, let's have a look at them. So Sevilla, this is the stats on Sevilla are extraordinary. So they haven't lost since November the 28th. They've drawn 7 of their last 9 league games, and the L's that you can see are all in cup games that they've lost as well. And then they've got, but the thing is, they've got Barcelona, Granada, Real Madrid.
Yes,
and then
the next game, isn't it?
Yeah, Barcelona, they've still got Villarreal to play. They've still got Atletico to play. I mean, it's not an easy run for Sevilla, and they're making everything look difficult at the moment, aren't they? They can't score a goal.
Home to Real Madrid as well.
Yeah.
The point I'm making is that 9-point gap between I'm not predicting Barcelona win the league, but I'm looking at it and thinking if Real Madrid were to draw a couple and Barcelona do win all theirs, and then suddenly that gap comes down to 4, 5, 6 points, then it becomes, you know, for Barcelona, I can't see it happening, but it's not impossible. And a lot rides on how Real Madrid reacts to last night's game, performance, result, what their mood is. Are they going to refocus, which I expect them to do? They're a team of winners. I expect them to do that. Manager has seen everything, but it might not go that way. You know, they might just suffer a little bit. They might pick up a draw here and there and Barcelona continue winning and suddenly that gap gets closer, close enough then to put pressure on Real Madrid, which then affects performances and results. So it's unlikely, but possible. But that is to the extent how this ride that Barcelona have been on this season in general is absolutely ridiculous. They've gone from a team that, and I probably went along with it at some stage, when Messi departed, and then we saw the lineup of players that were replacing him, Luke de Jong coming in on loan from Sevilla, the performances at the beginning of the season, the performances under Ronald Koeman, the choices he was making. The future looked bleak for Barcelona. It really did. You know, went out of the Champions League, they barely scored a goal in the group stage, rightly went out, but instead of Benfica went through behind Bayern. And then you're looking at it and thinking that they've got Napoli in the Europa League, don't fancy him in that. And then suddenly the new players come in and the manager has changed to the extent now where they're closing down a gap, possibly closing down a gap that was, I don't know what the gap was when Xavi took over. But I think they're 2 points ahead of Real Madrid now, aren't they? In one game less played in the same period, I think I heard on the analysis last night.
It didn't instantly turn around in terms of results, did it, for Xavi? He came in November, didn't he? Lost his third game at home
to Betis, which is his only defeat in the league.
Yeah.
And it's then slowly but surely picked up. And of course, it coincided with Traore and Aubameyang coming in, Ferran Torres coming in, Dembele getting fit, Pedri getting fit, which are all things that Koeman didn't have. But it's now astonishing, actually, because I envisaged, because of the financial situation of Barcelona as well, like most people, I envisaged a period of Barcelona being out of elite football for years, to be perfectly honest. Probably not a decade, as some people were suggesting. But I didn't expect a recovery in this season. And Aguero, you know, signing, I hope so. And he, unfortunately, he had to retire because of health reasons. That kind of summed up Barcelona's season in general, didn't it? He joined because his mate Messi was there. Then Messi left. Then he had the health injuries, then the health problems. And it's just things were going from bad to worse for Barcelona. I went to the Granada game and it was a sparse crowd because it was Monday night, been pouring down with rain and there was no optimism around the place. There was COVID restrictions in place, but there was barely 20,000 people in the Camp Nou, calling for Koeman's head, Luke de Jong and Piqué playing up front, and they battled to get a draw at home to Granada. And it looked so bleak. I remember saying to you, I went to the stadium and as a pundit, and I couldn't believe the state of the place. You know, I've been used to going into the TV gantry and the media area and stuff like that, thinking the team's a mess, the club's a mess, the stadium's a mess. This could be a real dark period for Barcelona. And, you know, all those things, a lot of those things still apply, but they've applied for a loan, another loan. $1.5 billion loan to rebuild the Camp Nou, which is desperately needed when you see what other big clubs around Europe are playing in and what they're doing to their stadiums. And but the most importantly, at the moment, in the instant, they've improved the team. Don't know what's going to happen in the summer, but to be honest, don't know how the financial situation is going to be in the summer. But they've certainly turned things around. From what was becoming a bit of a disaster area, to be honest, to the extent that I really genuinely thought there'd be a draw last night. I hate sitting on the fence, but I thought with both teams going in and both on a winning streak of four games in La Liga, they were both in good form. They both had good results in Europe. Everybody was talking about Barcelona, but I had respect for Real Madrid to think, no, Real Madrid will want to prove a point as well. They're 10 points clear at the top. They're going to win the league. They're not going to roll over and take it easy against Barcelona. It's got enough to play for in this Clásico. So I genuinely thought it would be a draw in that game. So for it to be as one-sided as it was, huge. It was a shock. I was stunned watching it. I was stunned. And I was seeing goal after goal after goal going in and then chance after chance after chance. It was an astonishing performance from Barcelona and from Real Madrid. And it was a stunning game of football in terms of God, didn't expect that. Didn't see that coming. But it's credit to Barcelona from that dark place they were in. They've got a hope now for the rest of the season. They can finish second. If they can close the gap significantly even more, even if they don't win the league, it sets the tone for the future. If they win the Europa League, it's another competition one. It's certainly a better place than it was 3 or 4 months ago.
Let's do the rest of La Liga, Terry. Right. Let's do Sevilla quickly, unless you can think of anything different to say that you and I haven't been saying to each other for months now. And we did it all Thursday night after the Europa League exit to West Ham, which was a lifeless, insipid performance, wasn't it, against West Ham. Follow it up with a 0-0 draw, which Real Sociedad had the better of that game, didn't they? Yes. And it's just limping to the end of the season, it would seem, from Sevilla.
Yeah, Ramiro didn't have a shot to make, a shot to save. Sevilla didn't have an attempt on target. They worked hard, great attitude. It was, but Real Sociedad had the clearer chances. I mean, Porto hits the post, David Silva hits the crossbar. Porto hasn't scored this season and then cleared one off the line from his own teammate, Shorloff, who picked his corner, beat the goalkeeper, Dimitrovic, and ricochets off of Porto's heel and goes over the crossbar. So, yeah, Real Sociedad, I think it was even in terms of the overall game, but the clearer chances were made by Sevilla. Possibly one of the best games I've seen from David Silva in a Real Sociedad shirt. And he only came on as a sub, but the transformation in quality in their team when he came on was fantastic, great to watch. So Real Sociedad should have won. Sevilla, Lamela came back from injury. That's one good note. They lost Bono from injury in the warm-up. So Dimitrovic came in goal. And actually, I think if I was forced to choose between the two, I think I'd go with Dimitrovic anyway. And he's a good goalkeeper. So they were lucky to have an experienced quality goalkeeper on the bench, so he came in and played his part, made some good saves, but no, not a lot of difference to say. In fairness to Lopetegui, I think the injuries are an issue. I mean, Ocampos came back in this game, he didn't make much difference, but when he was missing against West Ham through suspension, that harmed them. Papu Gomez is a decent player, is more than decent player as well. Diego Carlos makes them better at the back. So there are key players missing in Lopetegui's defence, but no shots on target sums up what we're seeing on a regular basis from Sevilla now. I don't think there was any intention last night to not go for the win. I think both teams who haven't scored enough goals, Levante have got more goals than Real Sociedad this season.
Yeah, it was
incredible. And they're going to miss Oyarzabal. So Real Sociedad were good, Sevilla weren't dreadful. But it sums up where both teams are at the moment, and they couldn't find a goal between them.
Celta Vigo 0, Betis 0 as well. So again, let's not dwell too much. Yep. It's not a bad point for Betis, is it?
No, I agree with that. Playing in Germany and then playing away again at the weekend. Again, they've got a long injury list as well. It's taken its toll this season, getting to the Copa del Rey final and travelling to go a distance in European football can. Competing for the top four is taking its toll. Wami's gone off the ball. He had the chances for Betis at the weekend. He had that purple patch, didn't he, where he suddenly looked like Maradona every week. And now that's dried up. And I was disappointed. I have to be honest, I was disappointed with Celta, to be honest. Edward Caldec came out and said his main intention is to avoid relegation. They've done that. They're not going down. Mm. And so I thought they could have been more ambitious. They were the slightly better team, but didn't do enough by a long way to really get at and trouble Betis with any real ambition to win the game. So a mid-table team, Celta, probably should have been a bit more courageous and took a gamble, thrown a few more attacking players at it, but they didn't.
Right. So let's go, working backwards chronologically for some reason that I don't normally do. Cadiz 1, Villarreal 0, which means that Cadiz are much better than Juventus. That's exactly how football works.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
In fact, first time out of the bottom three for 14 weeks. Let's do the relegation battle because we normally do that as a whole. Yeah. So great win for Cadiz. Good timing to play Villarreal after the win against Juventus, of course. Yeah. Osasuna 3, Levante 1. See, there are some good games. So they're just none of them on Sunday. Elche 0, Valencia 1. That was the goal I was referring to, the worst goal of the season, by the way.
Can we explain it? We have to explain it if people haven't seen it.
Yeah, go on. He's basically falling over, isn't he?
He's diving. He gets side of the defender and running towards goal. Down the right-hand channel, inside the penalty box, getting close to the goalkeeper. As goalkeeper comes out, there's a nudge from, I can't recollect which defender it was, and they nudge him in the back. And so Guedes is between the defender and the ball. There's a nudge in the back, and Guedes dramatically flips and flops in the air with a bit of a dive and a bit of an arch in the back to get the penalty. Why, I don't know, because he's through on goal with just the goalkeeper to beat. But he's so preoccupied with getting the penalty. And in the flip and the flop and the dive, he almost does a forward roll, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And somehow gets tangled up on the ball. And the ball hits him twice and then spins out and goes over the goalkeeper, who probably should save it, to be honest. I mean, it trickles past the keeper, doesn't it, Edgar Badia, and just trundles into the back of the net.
Understandably confused, though, by the fact that the player is falling over.
I guess.
Catches it. He sort of flipped, doesn't he? And he has changed direction. And he catches it almost with his trailing leg as he's going down.
Exactly.
There's
two touches as well.
Yeah.
It comes off one leg onto the other leg. A dreadful goal. But do you know, it counts as much as some of these thunderbolts he hits from 30 yards.
Yeah.
So a good win for Valencia.
And then Alaves 2. Yeah, Alaves 2, Granada 3 was a huge scoreline, wasn't it? And a good comeback from Granada. Yeah. Boy, they needed that. And Mallorca lost for a sixth game in a row, 1-0 away to Espanyol. So where are we standing with the relegation battle? I'll stick the table up for the Patreons.
Yeah, I would say that Alaves are in trouble. And the way they played in that game, a little bit more attack-minded, but I was frustrated with the tactics from Mendilibar. I mean, they go 2-1 up 56 minutes and he takes Hossolu off. Hudson is the only player that scores goals for them. I mean, in general, he took him off to hold on to 2-1 and they end up losing 3-2. And by the end of the game, he's putting on Miguel, who's a centre-forward, and they would have been far better off with keeping Hosselu on the bench. He missed a penalty, and his performance wasn't great. It wasn't particularly bad, but he is the go-to player if Alaves need a goal. And he just, and Mendilibar, I think he looks like he's going to be a manager who got relegated last year and is going to get relegated again this season. And his reputation is taking a bit of damage, to be honest. But Granada deserved it. Alaves play, the reason I think they're struggling, they play a high defensive line with not very quick central defenders. They're relying on an offside trap that is quite easy to beat. Granada had two goals disallowed. Once they realised that they had to time their runs better, they found it quite easy to create chances. And Puertas got the second. Escudero scored a great goal from the corner with a spectacular volley where it was drilled out, left-footed from the left side of the pitch. So outswinging corner, Escudero met it on the volley. Great goal to equalise. And then Luis Suarez, they were running behind. And it was quite easy for the Granada strikers just to keep making those runs in behind, get a little bit of service from the midfield players, and Alaves were in trouble. So Alaves in trouble. Levante is running out of time now, aren't they? And Osasuna are excellent against them. Chimi is... We talked about him getting back to his best after that, a couple of years out injured. And clearly he is. Great goal. Reminding me of the Carlos Alberto goal, I think, for Brazil.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the 1970 World Cup, where it's teed up and he comes on and strikes it. Right-footed, Chimi with that type of goal. Budimir and Brasenac with the other goals. Roger, decent goal to finish with, and a little bit of a comeback when they were 3-0 down. They get the first goal, and they probably had another couple of chances where they could have incredibly got a draw out of it, but Levante just running out of time now. With the other results of the weekend having gone against them, it really does make life difficult for Levante to have a chance to survive now. A little bit of hope, but not much left now. Hatafe Friday night, extremely unlucky, completely outplayed by Athletic. Athletic had all the play, all the attempts on goal. Hatafe dug in, they got an early goal from Enizunol, and quite a controversial set of decisions from a referee, to be perfectly honest, of which I must admit I was watching in Spanish in my hotel room on Friday evening. So I'm not sure the explanations for the goals. I've asked people over the weekend their explanations, and no one's any the wiser, to be honest. There was a goal disallowed from Oliveira, because I believe, from what I'm led to what I see, that Sandro was offside, but Sandro didn't touch it and didn't really make any attempt to go for the ball. So that was disallowed on the basis that Sandro was somewhere near the ball. And then Cuenca was sent off for a foul that was initially given as a penalty, but when you see VAR, it's outside the box. So the free kick is given. The yellow card was then turned into a red card. But there were other players around to defend the situation. So it wasn't a clear goal-scoring opportunity. It was a foul, but it was outside the box. Yellow card was enough for me. So Hatafe had to play a period of the game with 10 men. And Athletic missed a few chances, again, surprisingly. Not surprisingly for them. So Hatafe dug in, got another point. They're not out of trouble, but
one in six.
I still think they're going to be okay.
Yeah.
I still think they're going to be okay, though.
Yeah. Edging towards... There's only 3 points above Mallorca, to be fair. But Mallorca's form is dreadful, isn't it? It's alarming, isn't it?
Yes.
And you were saying Cadiz, sorry, I interrupted you, Terry. So,
obviously, Cadiz.
Much changed the Real team, wasn't it? Yeah.
Much changed the Real team. But Cadiz in general, I mean, I didn't recognise Villarreal in the red shirts. I'm sure I banged on the bat, said a couple of times on the weekend. I'm even looking at the players of Villarreal and who is that? Looking at numbers on shirts, they just look so different.
Yeah,
they played
yeah.
different. Changes made by Unai Emery, understandably. But Cadiz are competitive, and they're going to be in with a fight in every game now. Mm. And it's actually, I was pleased when Cadiz come up because they've got a fantastic fan base. It's a vibrant ground to watch football in, to watch it on television as well. And yet under Alvaro Cervera, it wasn't a joyous football team to watch. It wasn't a joyous stadium to watch on television because the football was so negative and so dull. And maybe they lacked quality in terms of players, which many had no choice but to play that style. It had a novelty to start with, but it became a little bit, it was a bit boring to watch, to be perfectly honest. Sunday now, they've changed completely.
That was 12th, their 12th goal of the season at home in match number, 15. And last season, just check, they scored 17 goals at home last season, the whole season. It's tough going, isn't it, as a fan?
It is. And as I said, if anyone's ever been there and watched a big game at Caddies, it's a brilliant stadium to go and watch football in. Mm. It really is. The fans are brilliant. It's colourful. I think they could be a really good addition to La Liga if they can stay there. But that wasn't the case under Severo. They were in lockdown as well, so we didn't have the supporters there. But their style of football wasn't great to watch. But it's changed now under Sergio González. And there was no hint of them settling for the draw in this game, which was really good to see. A draw at home to Villarreal in a relegation battle. A lot of managers would probably think, that's not a bad point. You know, we're edging closer. It's keeping us in contention. But there was only one team that was going to win that game at the end. That was the home team, Cadiz, who were going for it. Sobrino gets the goal. Lucas Perez comes on as a sub and scores and creates the chance with a great cross. Good finish at the far post. Massive celebrations. And as I said, that's their first time out in the bottom three in the last 14 rounds of La Liga action. So there's plenty of games to go. They're not out of it by any means. But the way Mallorca are playing, the way the manager is talking, the team selections from the Mallorca manager as well, he's making it sound a lot harder than it should be. And you hear his interviews after the game. He's saying it's complicated. It's this, it's that. And I'm thinking, no, pick the best players and pick a style of play. Be more ambitious. Give your team a little bit more confidence and belief and hope. So it's sometimes when a manager comes out and speaks after the game, it gives you an indication of the morale at the club, and the manager should be the person setting that climate, as they call it. You know, if you go in and it's complicated, I'm confused, I don't know what I'm doing, this is the whole thing spreads. So he's got to take charge of that situation, but I'm still not sure that they've got enough in the locker to stay up again.
Which leaves us one game, Terry, that we haven't done. We haven't done Atletico Madrid because it's just, they won away from home. Koke with the goal away to Rayo Vallecano in something of a derby. Correa sent off. He must have said something, wasn't he? Because there's no...
Yeah, there was two sendings off at the weekend. Yeah. I can't think who the other one was, where similar circumstances where... I might be wrong and people might disagree. It was Mojica.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
LJ. Yeah. When they shout, and I know the term they're using, and it's from a distance to the referee. It's a very well-known phrase in Spain. If anyone's cursing each other, it's pretty much always the same one. So people probably know what I'm talking about. Mm. And it's used in quite often. And it can be, Correa accidentally trod on. And as the player trod on, I can't remember who the player was, he just pushed him away a little bit. And I think he cursed by the fact that he hurt his foot because some big lump trod on little Correa's foot, which can hurt sometimes. And the referee sent him off for it. I don't even think it was aimed at the referee.
Yeah.
Because there would be no suggestion. Why would you shout at the referee when it's not in play? I think the player's walking backwards and treads on Correa's foot accidentally and Correa pushes him away. That player might say something. Correa says something back. And the referee sent him off. It was so quick. To the extent that I was commentating on the game, I thought, has he been sent off for the push? It was a push in the chest, but someone standing on your foot, which is quite a natural reaction. Mojica's was, again, he was 10, 15 yards away from the referee when he felt he should have had a foul. It wasn't given. I'm against players surrounding a referee. I'm against players getting in the face of a referee and abusing. And it has to be a red card. But I think when it's done from a distance and it's in frustration at one thing or another, I would hope the referee would show a degree of understanding in the fact that, okay, he's sworn. He's said this phrase. He's not in my face. Just say to him, just calm down, and just leave it at that. Because I think it's clear and obvious whenever a player goes across and rants and raves in a referee's face. More often than not, they don't get sent off because they're surrounded by three or four other players and the referee can't send them all off. So it smacked of instant decisions from both referees. It appeared in the media as well that there might have been some sort of clamped down guidance from the league in terms of this behaviour, which obviously these two players hadn't had the memo. But Fred, let's go. We talked about Real Madrid having an experiment. Simeone had an experiment in this game, in the fact that they took the lead. They were a better team. They were playing really well. Scored 3 minutes into the second half, a deserved goal. They probably should have had one in the first half. Griezmann had a couple of chances. João Felix was good again. Atletico were playing really well. When they got the goal, it wasn't a surprise. Raya were competitive as well. So it's a good performance from Atletico. Then suddenly Simeone tried the old experiment of, right, let's see if my players have remembered how we parked the bus against a team that are now 10 without a win. They've only scored 3 goals in those games. And right, we'll let them play attack with defence for the rest of the game. See if we can hold on. And they did. But there's no need to do that. God, they made that a struggle. When they get the first goal, it could have been 2 or 3 nil after that. But it was almost Griezmann went to left back. It was Suarez came on. I your analogy at the beginning of it, I guess you're alluding to the fact that you have that sprint against Mario Suarez.
Sprint.
and Mario Suarez.
It was like free bus pass. Two guys with their free bus passes.
35-year-olds.
Yeah, running for the bus. And if, you
know, I guess that's what you were talking about. Mario Suarez would never have kept up with Luis Suarez. And he was able to stride away, he looked like.
Yeah, it's just so it's painful. It's actually painful watching.
Away.
I could feel his hamstrings. I could feel my. I was like, I could feel that. It didn't warm down properly, you know.
But it did. It ended up with Griezmann at left midfield. I mean, 4-5-1 with Suarez out front of his own. Never got the ball out, and Griezmann got pushed further and further back to the extent he was playing left back in a back six, and that's how they ended up playing. It was, and there was no need for it, but it was almost like an experiment, right? Practice session.
Yeah.
Attack versus defence in a real game. Let's see if we've got that old mentality back. Let's see if we've got that ability still to defend against Man City for 180 minutes with Griezmann playing left back and
I guess
Suarez up front. But it was almost like an experiment. They got the result. They're pushing on. Another clean sheet. Oblak looked good again. They looking very much like the previous. Last year's version of Atletico Madrid again.
Yes. Right, I missed a question from Neil. I think the answer, to me, the answer is, well, maybe. So his question was, could it have been a different game if the referee had sent off Aubameyang for the tackle on Kroos? Yes, obviously. His son, Neil's son, is a ref. He said red card. Do you think it was a ref? I didn't think it was... It doesn't jump out at me that it was a red. I can't remember the details of it now, of the tackle.
No, I cannot recollect it being that controversial at the time. I recognise it being a heavy, heavy challenge. You've got to be 100%, it's got to be clear and obvious in a Clásico, in the first half of a game of football. Yes, it would have been a different outcome.
Yeah.
And you're always going to get those challenges early on in the game. Aubameyang is not necessarily a nasty player, is he? But it was a heavy challenge on Kroos, I have to admit. Bouncing ball, and it was mistimed, and there are other games where it possibly could have been a red, but I think probably Real. I haven't seen too much of that mentioned in the Spanish press, which I think if it had been clear and obvious, might have been addressed by the Spanish
football
media.
Sometimes, isn't it? We chat about every game, even sometimes when there's not much to say. So if it had been 0-0, we'd be talking about that, wouldn't we? We'd also be talking about the colours that the players were wearing.
Oh,
were outrageous!
What was that about?
Yeah.
I've read the bump on Real Madrid's reason why they wore the black kit. It was to celebrate some anniversary. It was at the beginning of the month. It's to celebrate some link up with a designer from Adidas that they've had an association with for 20 years. Yeah. But no. Why?
You can buy one for 100,
blue and red.
180 euros. Yeah. Absolutely. There is an issue now. We're getting footballers sort of caught on with colour blindness. And the fact that people are colour blind generally find it hard to watch football because the kits sometimes you see. Like those of us who aren't, we can watch blue against red and find it and watch it and see it all perfectly clearly. Other people can't. Fair enough. So kits should be designed with that in mind. Fair enough. But white against the Blaugrana is absolute every other Clásico forever. And it could not be clearer. It could not. One plain white shirt and the others striped in colours. absolutely yes. could not be clearer. I would imagine yeah. for colourblind.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah. That irritated me this weekend.
Yeah.
But Clasico with Real Madrid playing at home in their fourth choice kit.
Yeah,
special
yeah.
anniversary celebration and from a, that happened almost a month ago.
If before you get your plane, Terry, a mere €180 if you want to pick one up. So
for the kit or the shirt?
For the kit. I think for the I don't know. Whatever, it's outrageous.
It was made of something special.
Gold.
And it did give you a special meaning. And it did, it came with all the, you know, I'm thinking, it's a football shirt.
Yeah.
That's it. Don't and
it looked, it looked like a very heavy one last night as well, didn't it?
Which won't be seen again.
No, it'll be in the bin.
Yeah, and not many people. Oh, you bought that shirt that Real Madrid got beat 4-0 in at home.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it's going to sell many now.
No, not for that.
No, I agree with that. Traditionalism in a massive game like that should always be adhered to.
If you possibly can. So if you need a clever design sometimes with a stripe or a slash or something, so it's not just. You know, for colorblind people to get, I get that, but you absolutely don't. This absolutely white against blue and green and blue red is absolutely perfectly fine. Stop messing around.
And it's maybe a special anniversary, a special one. If the game is on that day, if it's the 100th anniversary or something, then you've got a traditional kit from the past or something. I kind of get that. I understand that. But this was, there wasn't enough justification in this anniversary. Or reasoning behind, it's an anniversary of a 20-year link-up with some designer from Adidas.
Yeah.
Which end, was it Y3 on the front? That was the name of the designer or something. And no, it didn't wash with me, sorry.
No.
Not having it.
Right, we'll leave
I'm
it there.
I'm a dinosaur.
Yes. Now, some things are worth defending. Not everything is, everything was better in the past. It wasn't, but
don't
mess around with everything for the sake of it. Yeah, that seems, that's not unreasonable. Right. Thank you to the Patreons for your questions. Thank you to everybody for listening. Thank you to the Patreons for your continued support. There is no La Liga next week, Terry. They're having an international break because international teams want to play. It's fine. Jürgen Klopp doesn't like it, but Jürgen, get over it, mate. Not everyone's fascinated with your team all the time. We want to play some international football at some point. So we'll be back. We'll be back chatting to Patreons, and we'll be back with La Liga when it picks up again. More big games as soon as we're back in action again. So after the international break, and we'll see everyone for more podcasts soon. Thanks for your support. Bye bye.